Members, we're going to bring this committee to order. We have a quorum. So I know Representative Poppy has been looking at the minutes and would like to move them. So, anybody, any additions or corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes are done. Members, today we're going to we are going to get a presentation from youth groups and training programs, and just so that everyone is clear, Representative Rukabina is the Finance Committee Chair, and this is a Policy Committee. We get to ask whatever questions we would like, but my hope and my focus is to try to figure out what they're doing, why they are taking the fiscal constraints that they're being put into, and in terms of what the governor's budget did, and how they measure what they're doing and how they measure the results. So having said that, we all have the agenda in our packet, and we're going to start with the Minneapolis Summer Youth Program, if we could. Deb Barr-Helgen and Linda... Oh, I'm gonna massacre this name. Takra?
Takra.
Thank you. So, welcome to the committee.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Deb Barr-Helgen. I'm the director of the Employment and Training Program for the City of Minneapolis. And with me today, behind me, is Ann Fisher, who's the manager of the Minneapolis Youth Program. Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on the importance of youth programs and the impact on the governor's cuts in the Workforce Development Fund. Linda Toksik here from Minneapolis Parks and Rec will also follow my results or my remarks with information on the Learn to Earn program. In 2006, the legislature appropriated $1 million per year for our summer youth employment program. As a result of this funding, the City of Minneapolis is able to expand our program to employ an additional 725 at-risk youth. The governor's proposed funding cuts would mean that at least 200 fewer youth in Minneapolis would be employed. Given the massive loss of jobs occurring in our community, our youth would face even fewer opportunities this summer to learn the value of a job. Over the years, Minneapolis has maintained a strong commitment to youth employment. We believe this is critical given the multiple barriers faced by inner-city youth, including concentrated poverty, chronic teen unemployment, and lack of educational attainment. Our summer youth programs addresses each of these risk factors head-on. Beyond the economic value that the summer youth jobs programs provide, we believe strongly that a high-quality summer jobs program is part of our public safety effort. Keeping kids engaged in positive activities like a job means that we have fewer youth who are recruited into gangs or committing crimes or doing other unproductive activities. In fact, the juvenile crime rate in Minneapolis has measurably decreased over the past 2 years, in part to our summer jobs program and as a result of Mayor Ryback's focus on youth violence. For example, juvenile youth violence is down 36% from 2006, which is remarkable. What's their primary purpose? Well, there's a great demand for youth programs in Minneapolis. We just received our applications for this summer. The deadline was the end of January. We had 3,300 applications for youth summer jobs. So we have a long waiting list for youth that want to work, and this will grow longer with these proposed cuts. The goals for the program include that we're creating summer subsidized jobs for youth. The youth earn workplace skills, they earn a high school credit, they connect with a mentor through a business partner program, and they experience a real-world connection between work and school, which is important. The youth who are meeting these goals in Minneapolis are at risk. They're economically disadvantaged, they're low income, they're youth in foster care, they're juvenile offenders, they're teen parents, and they're English language learners, all of these risk factors. 87% of the youth served last year were from communities of color, and 33% of the youth served spoke a language other than English at home. For example, some of the youth work at places like Nigazee Communications, It's a Native American organization in Minneapolis, and they teach the kids computer skills. They work at the Somali Education Center, where youth act as tutors to younger children. And they work at Emerge Community Development, doing neighborhood beautification projects in North Minneapolis. Our expected results, we expect to serve 725 youth, ages 14 and 15, and they'll work 9 weeks this summer, earning at least minimum wage or higher. So this is typically the first work experience for a youth. So it's important, really, to start them on the right track in life. We will engage 50 employers that will hire them for the summer. Some of our performance indicators are that we will employ 725 youth. 400 of those 14 and 15-year-olds will go through work readiness training. 171 will earn an academic credit. And 107 will have a one-on-one mentorship established for the summer. So, and the question, who has similar goals and results? Our summer youth program is fully integrated with the Minnesota Youth Program and the Workforce Investment via youth programs. The City of Minneapolis has met or exceeded our performance measures for all of our youth programs. So what's the economic impact of the downturn? What's the impact of economic downturn on the demand for youth programs? Are any new impacts anticipated? The demand for youth programs has increased due to two things. Right now, more families from heads of households that are unemployed or unemployed, and due to this unemployment, adults are accepting entry-level jobs now, formerly occupied by youth, and therefore youth are in need of job programs just like this because entry-level work is now scarcer, and there's a greater need for youth to help support their families. In fact, a significant number of youth that are served in our programs spend some of the money earned to pay for their household expenses like rent and school supplies. So right now, I'll just turn this over to Linda Tostick. Again, thank you for the opportunity to share the information regarding our very successful summer youth program.
Thank you, Ms. Tostick.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. I guess I just want to tell you a little bit about our program.
Before you start, could you identify yourself for the record?
Oh. Linda Tostick with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board.
Thank you.
Our program is the Summer Youth Employment and Training Program. It has educational component. We've been in operation since 1986, and we try to serve the most the youth with the greatest need. Our program is kind of unique in the fact that youth that are invited to be a part of our program come from referrals through the neighborhood, from youth servicing organizations, as well as our park staff, so that we are getting applications for the youth that have the greatest need. Low income, youth and juvenile probation system. They come to our parks and work in the summer. They do basic park maintenance tasks. We also involve them in some special projects so that during the summer they're building a good work experience. They're building a good work ethic. They're learning about policies and procedures, making them more employable after the program's done for the next employee. We work very hard to instill in them all the qualities needed to be a great and successful employee. And we're trying to kind of build a great workforce for the city of Minneapolis. Youth that have been involved in our program in the past are now park maintenance staff, crew leaders. We have last summer in the Teen Teamwork program itself, the Learn to Earn program, we had three adult site supervisors that were previously teen workers in the past. We also had an educator in our school component that was a graduate of Teen Work, went on to college, got her degree, and came back and is serving as an educational coordinator now in our Teen Work program. So it's been highly successful. It's greatly needed. This summer's program, the application process hasn't even started, and I already have a stack of applications. I'm getting dozens of phone calls from panicked parents, youth servicing organizations throughout the city who are struggling to find a place for, these kids with these great needs, and, we're hoping that we will have the funds to be able to help as many as possible.
I think Representative Hawes.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. We're just questioning over here the teamwork handout here. Is that your handout or
yes,
is that?
Yes, that's for the teamwork. But underneath yours, it's called Earn to Learn. That's commonly known as team teamwork.
Thank you. Testifiers, now, as we struggle with this economic downturn, are you going to be looking at the variables within your program, such as the number of weeks the program takes place, the blend of training versus work experience, or, you know, working with your curriculum so that there's a reduction in the amount of dollars made by the individuals, but maybe even an increasing the number of individuals that have the opportunity for this experience?
It's an option. You know, we have in the past shortened the teamwork program to be able to serve additional youth. You know, it kind of takes away from the whole experience. You know, you kind of have things in place for them. It takes a while for them to learn to catch on to some of the, you know, work that you're doing, but if that's what we need to do, that's, you know, we've done it in the past.
Mr. Chair, I asked that question just because it would not have too strong an opinion other than I've been in the business a couple of lifetimes. 9 weeks is a pretty long program, is it not? You have a 9-week program, testifier?
Yes. Representative Hazen, members of the committee, yes, our program is 9 weeks. I would expect that if we face budget cuts, one of the options is to reduce the number of weeks employed. Mm-hmm. But that's not the ideal situation that leaves kids kind of hanging for what to do with the remaining weeks, but we try to maximize our opportunities and serve the most number of youth that we can each summer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, testifier.
Representative Obermiller?
Thank you. Could you tell me how many of the kids, your serving age is 14 to 18, how many of the kids are using the program more than 1 year, or are they limited to 1 year? And then secondly, are there any federal funds that you use in your program as far as the matching funds or something like that the state provides?
That's a great question.
Representative Obermiller, members of the committee, we do have promote the program as a kind of a stepping stone. So we have youth that use the program, and we promote that because we have an older youth component. So we have youth in this program for 14 to 15 year olds, and then we promote it so that they're able to eventually move into our older youth unsubsidized program. And this is an internship program where employers pay the wages. It's called Step Up. So yes, we definitely promote it. As far as to speak to the federal funding question, we have Workforce Investment Act funding that's intended to do year-round. It's not a summer program, it's a year-round intensive case management program with very stringent performance outcomes, and we use that to serve, again, at-risk youth in the city of Minneapolis. Our appropriation is approximately $1 million.
Thank you.
Representative Winkler?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I was just trying to kind of piece together the funding piece, and Ms. Novak, for the benefit of other members of the committee. So we last, 2 years ago, I guess, appropriated $1.325 million for the total of the two programs, and of that, $325,000 was earmarked basically for the Learn to Earn program, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So in this, okay, so then by taking out the $650,000, essentially we're taking out the amount that was funding the Learn to Earn, or the governor's proposal would take out the amount that was funding Learn to Earn, leaving a $2 million base, which I guess could be spread between the two programs, presumably. Is that correct?
Members, that is unclear to me. We, in the city, expected that the cuts would be proportional between the two programs.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I was just trying to clarify that piece of it. I have a question on the Learn to Earn. It says that it's $2,333 per participant for the 9-week program. Do you have any kind of breakdown on, you know, how much of that money does the kid get? How much of the money goes into other pieces?
I don't have that with me. The majority of it does go to the youth worker. You know, the larger the number of participants in the program, the cost goes down because the administration is, you know, a kind of a flat fee, and it's case in piece. We just kind of, if we get additional funds, we get more kids involved. I think if I'm can remember correctly, it was kind of, I think it's like $1,700 that the kids can earn themselves, and then the rest is program costs, administrative, classroom, curriculum, site supervisors.
Mr. Chair, sorry, I should be able to do the math in my head, but what is that? Is there a targeted hourly rate for something that the kids get?
Last summer, the youth earned $6.55 an hour.
And then finally, Mr. Chair, I guess the last question I have is there any, do you have any anecdotal or other kind of testimony as to kids who participate in the program, they leave, and what do they carry with them? I know that, you know, you have to have a job in order to learn how to have a job, in a way. But is there, do you have sort of follow-ups on what these kids end up doing who participate? I know that for, in the nonprofit sector, if you have a youth development program, there's often kind of a follow-up that happens afterwards to know the effects that the program has on the kids in the long run. Do you have anything along those lines?
For the
in either program,
yeah. For our, you know, we offer our services as a reference for them, you know, for an unlimited time, whatever it takes to help them get their next job. We, as I mentioned before, most of our youth are referred to us through youth servicing organizations, and so we have this relationship with them, and so we're able to, through different conversations, follow up and find out, you know, how the youth are doing. A lot of our kids are park users throughout the rest of the summer, the year, and so we kind of, it's kind of like a family. We kind of know what's going on. We have a youth that really wanted to be a part of this testimony today, who was in the summer program last summer. He did well, but he stumbled a few times. But after having some conversations with him, and you know, he got sent home a couple of days and lost some of his opportunity to earn money. But he came back, finished the program successfully, and actually, throughout the rest of the year, he was a volunteer at his neighborhood park, and now just got hired to work at that facility.
Members, I just wanted to announce that we have the high school pages of the week here with us over on my right, and welcome. Appreciate you joining us, and hopefully the decorum that we show here is appropriate for the for your time here, and we also have the Academy of Holy Angels students here with us, and hopefully you'll learn, we're hoping that it's your government class, and you'll learn the voice of the people and not take our bad habits with you. Members, thank you, and hopefully you students will find some good things here. I'm not sure I've heard this, the answer to my question, and I will call all the other presenters as you come down and talk. One of my concerns is, how do you measure your participants' growth? And how do you measure your participants' success? You can, you know, how many times we've talked to them, you know, they didn't get in any trouble this year. I'm more concerned, and I hope that we as a committee are trying to find ways that in a youth program or in a job service program, we're looking at 5 years, 10 years, 20 years out. How do we improve the state of Minnesota and the lives of our citizens with the monies that we're spending? So if briefly, because we've got three others and we're going to move along here, but briefly, if you've got some of those answers to that, how do you track and how long do you track, and do you see some success 20 years down the road?
Members, I'll let Ann Fisher answer this question. Thank you, members. Ann Fisher, City Minneapolis Youth Employment and Training Program. One thing that we do in the city is every 2 weeks, the work site supervisors that are working with the youth actually measure the incremental successes that occur throughout the summer. On the youth time sheet, there is a part where the supervisor has to sit down with the youth and go through many different performance measures and talk to the youth about each of those measures and whether or not that supervisor thinks that youth is progressing and showing some progress throughout the summer.
inevitably it occurs. It occurs throughout the summer. Your question is more to the point of longitudinally. Unfortunately, the monies that we receive don't often have that kind of a, it takes a lot of money to do that kind of a study. So the answer is, unfortunately, we've not been able to do that sort of a study to know exactly where these youth are in 5 years or in 10 years. We did do a study, though, a number of years ago that was really related to one of our mentorship programs. And what that particular study showed is that kids who were in our summer program and did have a mentor were more likely to move on to post-secondary school, to post-secondary training, to activities that were going to help increase their success as an adult. And so, again, I hate to quote that study because it was a number of years ago, and it's always in our interest and our best interest to do that sort of a study, but again, there generally isn't the kind of funding available to perform that. So as Linda spoke about, these kids are connected, we hear about stories, but do we have it down on paper? No, we don't.
Thank you, and that would be something, or somehow I would love to see some of the programs, I'd love to see every program that the state does figure out some way to look at the longevity of their program and the success farther down, because we tend to help a lot of people, or we try to. We don't know if we're successful at all, and that's the problem. I mean, we have anecdotal evidence, we don't, it'd be nice if people got a phone. And I know how difficult it is to track somebody by phone, particularly when they're teenagers,
right.
5 years later. But that's one of the things we, as the dollars get tighter, we're going to have to start trying to figure out how to do.
Right.
Representative Winkler, you had a question?
And Mr. Chair, we should explain to the testifiers that we were much more hard on the Commissioner of Deed when he came in and talking about the Governor's broader economic development than we are on you. But I think the point that you made, Mr. Chair, is a crucial one. And I guess the question then is, what about, there must be studies from around the country about models of summer youth programs that are the most successful and what the best practices are or things that we can copy. And maybe that's what yours is based on, I don't know. But I think we don't always have to do the longitudinal study for every program, but we can model what we're doing based on what evidence is out there. I don't know if you have any comments on that.
Right, and I guess that's why I would say in Minneapolis we do such a good job, I think, of just the model itself. And so we put into the model all the things that we know that when we were younger, what we needed to help spur us to want to further our education, to get that training. So that's our model. It's not real complicated. Showing kids the value of hard work, allowing them some money to show them that if you work hard and you show up and you understand workplace skills and employability and what it takes to be a good employee, that's really the most important work that we do. And that short, 6 week to 9 week experience does worlds of good. If you think about never having that experience at all versus having it even for 6 or 9 weeks, you know that it does good.
Members, we have two more questions, then we're going to move on to the next group. Representative Hawes, did you have a question?
No, I have a comment, though.
Comment. All right, then we'll get to Representative.
As one of my first questions was, when you're bringing this in the balance from work experience to curriculum development, as you increase that work experience actually out on the job and getting paid to do jobs, what has to give is the behavioral development part of that program. And the behavioral development part of that program has immediate value, and if it has immediate value, it has long-term value. So if it's helping this child in the summer, if you're squaring them away so that they're going to be more successful in school when they go back, that's measurable, and that's predictable that it is going to make a difference in the future. But that comes at the cost of what we think of a work program of actually getting out and pulling weeds for 8 hours, and that's the part of the program we said hi to them and goodbye to them. Hi and goodbye is not enough to change behavior. So that's my lecture for the day. Thank you.
In the third lifetime or the second lifetime?
A very long lifetime.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't get the name here. I won't say your last name, but I can't say it.
It's nice to know there's another member that has trouble with names.
In your documentation here, at least on teamwork, it says, in addition, youth indicated they also learned how to communicate with their peers, be on time, follow directions, and work as a member of a team within a multicultural ethnic work group. Do you document that so that we have people, you have information coming back from these individuals? So let's say Tommy or Susie or Sally, you've got that documentation that we can see?
Yes, we have
that?
Evaluations that the youth do at the end of the program every year. Our education component is a very important piece into our program. You know, we keep them up on their math, reading, writing skills. We offer life skills component. The kids are learning, about relationships, peer pressures, how to deal with youth violence in their neighborhoods, and at the end of the program, we ask for their input, what really works best for you this summer, what's important to you, and so we make sure that we offer that the following year. And in that evaluation, they also, put down some of those comments that are put in there. So we do have them on record, yes.
Well, Mr. Chair, to the testifier, if we could see some copies of that would be great. I mean, that would give us some anecdotal evidence. I think the chairman was asking to look to see if there's some results here, and then I would think that would be some place where you could say, the next year you could call them back and say, well, how you doing?
Thank you. Thank you for coming down.
I'm
sure you're going to... I'm sure that the finance chair will ask you to come in and defend the dollars, so we're trying to figure out the policy and get ready for Rukavina's scalpel. Thank you. The next group is the Opportunity Industrial... No, I'm sorry, St. Paul's Youth Program. Not only am I... my glasses aren't working.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Matthew Reinerts with the City of St. Paul. I run the Youth Job Program. It's called the Youth Job Corps, and I apologize. Mr. Wilson was not able to make it today, but I brought some other fantastic partners that partner with the Youth Job Corps. Tamara Downschwei, she's with the Community Design Center of Minnesota. Fabulous work that they do, and Sergeant Ray Jefferson of the St. Paul Police Department. He runs a program called ACOP, and we can get into that. And he works with St. Paul Housing and things like that. We can get into that a little bit later. But I also want to thank some of my other partners that partner with the Youth Job Corps are here today. Jeff from Focus Beyond. We got Michael from the YWCA, Sheila from Compass. And we've got Jim, thank you, Jim, from Youth Express. So we've got a good crew representing the Youth Job Corps today. So
those are the people that are going to come down and talk to us after we adjourn, and they're going to keep us from getting to the next meeting.
Yeah, they're going to keep you here. We'll buy you lunch.
No, you won't.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. You can't do that. That's right. I'm a city employee. I do know that. Yeah. And I'm bummed the pages aren't here. I used to be a page myself, so what a fun job that was. Okay, well, the Youth Job Corps started in 2004, but every year we've been getting bigger and bigger, and since we have that state funding, we've jumped to over 140% more kids since the state funding. And you all have this here, I think, in your packet here, so I'm just going to go pretty much through this a little bit. Have Tamara and Ray give a little bit of explanation about what they do, and then definitely love to have your questions. This year we had 745 kids all working in the program. We had 1,058 kids who were eligible for the program. Every single one of those kids were offered a job opportunity, and 745 kids took advantage of it. A lot of kids that didn't either found other jobs or just decided. I remember one kid saying, "Nah, I don't want to work this summer."
Okay.
So, because I call all the kids and say, "Hey, are you coming to the orientation? Let me get to that." What we do is We have an application. We send out the application. The kids send in the application. We go through, make sure everything's complete. And then I send out a letter to these kids asking them to come to a job skills training. It's a two-hour class where we teach them life skills, safety, how to write a resume, how to do interviews, and job skills. Once you have a job, how to keep the job. We give them this little orientation book here, and it has all these tips and everything like that on it. So they go to that. They leave that. I'll send them another letter saying, okay, thank you for coming to our orientation. Now you must call, like, Tamara to set up a job interview. So it's their responsibility to call Tamara, set up this interview. They'll come in, and like beforehand, I'll meet with Tamara and say, look, so-and-so is going to call you. This is going to be their first interview. Let's, you know, help them along with this skill of interviewing here. So they'll come in and do the interview, and hopefully they do well, and then Tamara will take them on to her crew. So that's the process of the Youth Job Corps. But the Youth Job Corps is for kids 14 to 21 who are at or below 80% of the median income, and this year 69% of the youth participants came from households which earned 30% or less than the median income. 92% of those participants were youth of color. We have some job coaches that go around from site to site that talk not only to the kids to make sure that their needs are met, because sometimes those kids don't feel comfortable talking to their supervisors, so that they'll talk to this job coach, and then the job coach will also talk to like the supervisors, like Tamara and things like that, to make sure everything's going all right. Every single kid that applies, I try to employ within 1.5 miles of their house. Every single kid, I Google their house. Every single one, I see where they are in relation to a job that I can place them. And also in the application, I have a list where these kids want, where these kids' interests are. So let's say somebody's interested in gardening. All right, well, I know we have a gardening crew over in 55106. I'll place, and this kid's coming from 55106, and I know exactly where they are. I'll place them at that spot right there. So, and then we track the kids through the year, make sure that, like I say, their needs are being met, and at the end of the year also, we give them an evaluation, and on that evaluation this year, 100% of the participants reported they'll be returning to school in the fall. These are just some of the questions I asked. 100% of the participants reported their work experience had prepared them for a job in the future. 100% of the participants reported that they learned what an employer expects of a good employee. And then at the end of the summer, a lot of times, like our libraries, we employ kids in the library as well. They take the kid on and actually hire him on full time. Also, we have our Blooming St. Paul Horticultural Academy. We have a bunch of kids in this. They start the year in our Blooming St. Paul program, and we give them a little quiz on what they know, and a lot of them aren't too familiar with some things, so we have this little curriculum, and we go through our gardening staff teaches them all kinds of stuff, and at the end of the year, they give them that same test, and the results are through the roof on what they've learned, and they really like, you know, what they're doing. On the back of this handout also, it has our partners here, what some of the things they're doing, the skills they're learning. We're with a thing called Under Construction, where they learn carpentry, painting, electrical, plumbing, and bricklaying. We do everything from that to, like, say, pulling weeds. We had one of our Youth Job Corps members working for Senator Marty this year, this past summer, and had a fantastic experience there. So they're kind of all over. One kid worked in our city attorney's office. Another worked with our public works, working on cars and vehicles. That was that kid's interest. We placed them there. So that's what the Youth Job Corps is all about. And again, the state funding has been, we've more than doubled our participants, and this year I want to hit the 1,000 mark. So, and I think that's I don't see why that's not possible if we get that state funding. I think we can definitely do that. And you know, we get some pretty good pubs here. This is Tamara's program that was featured on in the Sunday paper, Helping Kids Grow. It talks about the job, but the Youth Job Corps not only is a job program, It's really a skills program. It teaches the kids, hey, you know, you got to get up, you got to be responsible, you got to get to work on time, you got to plan your routes to work. So it's really, it's more than a job program. We say it's a skills program. So thank you for your time. And again, I'll be available for questions. And Tamara here, she can explain a little bit about her program and what the funding means to her.
It's always nice to have a sedated witness.
Well, it's an honor to be in front of all of you here.
If you could identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Tamara Downs Schwei, with the Community Design Center of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Well, as I said, it's an honor to be here, and I would be very honored to talk to you about what we've been able to do through the support of the Youth Job Corps program during the summer in St. Paul, particularly on the east side of St. Paul, where our program is really one of the shining lights for youth who are looking to have something productive to do during the summer and make some money. One of the ways, as Matt was talking about, we first connect with kids. They're looking for a job. They're looking to make some money. Once they get to us and have the interview, we meet their family members, and that is a big part of our program. We interview the youth, but we also introduce ourselves to their family and immediately engage their siblings or parent or guardian to really learn about what opportunities youth have once they enter our program. Last summer, we had about 40 teenage youth, 14 to 18 years old, all low-income youth in the threshold that Matt mentioned, youth of color, majority Hmong youth, Latino, African-American, some Anglo, really representative of the community that we're working in, and really youth who come to us and figure out that they have to work hard if they're going to be part of the Youth Job Corps program, but they're also going to learn and they're going to have an amazing opportunity to make career connections, meet people each Wednesday during our summer program. We bring in guest speakers who work for different environmental and food-related industries where they get to talk and find out, if I stick with this, I can have a job like that, or I can really open up my horizon and learn about these other things. And so part of it is the working, but as was mentioned by one of the speakers here, it's a little bit more than the working. Once they connect with us, they're working hard every day, but they know they'll give back to their community as well. So part of the work they've done is some incredible restoration of the Bruce Bento Nature Sanctuary on St. Paul's east side. Over the last few years, that piece of land has really undergone a transformation that's been in large part due to support from this program. Youth come, and they're excited to see. They're actually really so engaged in that sanctuary now. They're waiting to find out what's going to happen next with land acquisition and what could be placed there for the community to have more opportunity there. And Sweet Hollow Park, rain gardens all over the east side, they've been responsible for installing. And so they're getting those environmental skills that can really get them into that green jobs pipeline that we know we're helping to build. And these youth aren't always able to connect to opportunities like that and really find out, what is a green job? Is it food or the environment or manufacturing? And we can break that down for them through this program. And they're able to then not only make those connections, they're able to build gardens in a community that has a lot of foreclosures happening and a lot of depressed situations. So these are youth that are out there looking for something to do, and we've connected them to really amazing ways to help transform their neighborhood. As Matt mentioned, a lot of the youth bike to our office for their work. They walk to our office, and so they're also having some healthy activity in the process of getting to us and able to then learn about healthy eating. So the garden, we have 7 food gardens on the east side of St. Paul. We also then cook with them on the Wednesdays, and so they're learning not only how to grow the food and get the skills to be in that new career, but also then how to bring that back to their family. And they reach hundreds, if not thousands, every year of additional community members through the presentations they do in the service. And so they'll be working, but we'll have school groups and summer groups from St. Paul's Park and Rec and other programs come in, and these youth are able to then share what they're learning, feel like they're really being leaders in their community by passing along that knowledge. So some of the questions I heard were about, well, what happens to the youth after they've gone through our program? How do we know we're successful? That's something that we're working on every day, every week. We've been really fortunate to have some partnership with the University of Minnesota and some evaluators to really try to have a handle on what are the best practices right now and integrate incorporate that into our program development as well as our evaluation tool development. And so we've got short, medium, long-term indicators we're really trying to look at as we're doing our summer surveys. We utilize these Job Corps summer surveys as well as our own staff assessments. And I can tell you right now, numerous youth who have gone through our program have gone on to study environmental-related subjects at universities. Our graduation rate is so impressive, considering the communities these youth are living in. The vast majority are graduating from high school and then considering college, and not only going to college, but they're going and studying biology and sustainability. And there's one particular youth who this year is at the University of Minnesota studying sustainability, and she's also gotten a job with the Environmental Learning Center as a result of her experience with the Youth Job Corps with us, and is now going to be connecting to us and helping us to keep our program relevant to her peers. So really, we've got multi-year retention. More than 50% of the youth in our program stay with us for more than 1 year, and they bring in their peers, and they just, our phone is ringing, as was mentioned earlier. Are we still going to have opportunities? Parents are knocking on our door, and when they come, they're wondering, is there still a program for our youth? So I just can't speak highly enough of what we've been able to see as a result of this support in our community.
Thank you. Before we take any questions, why don't we bring up the other testifier?
This is Sergeant Ray Jefferson with the St. Paul Police Department, and he's kind of one of our new partners that we brought along into the Youth Job Corps. Ray, maybe you could tell a little bit about that. And also, I'm sure that you would know, the long-term effects. You see the kids out there and the things like that.
Sergeant Ray Jefferson with St. Paul Police Department. One of the programs that we have is within public housing. I work in a division called ACOP, Stands for A Community Outreach Program, which is a partnership that the St. Paul Police Department has entered into with the St. Paul Public Housing to do outreach work in the community there, work with the families to be successful. And one of the components that we are working on with Matt and this Job Corps thing is to get kids employed, okay? Get them some experiences and understanding about what it is to work and how it is to work and what you do when you do work. Simple things like, what do you do when you get a paycheck? Most of the kids that we had the first year that we were dealing with these kids would take their paychecks and go to the check cashing shop, pay 20% to cash a check. That's ridiculous. But they had no knowledge of what to do, to go to the bank, open a bank account, talk to a banker, get a savings account going. They didn't know those things. So some of the things that we've done with this program is develop it further than just having an employment thing. It's kind of a leadership and mentorship kind of program where we've entered into other partnerships with some banks and things like that where they will come in and say, hey, this is what you do when you get a paycheck. You come to us. We take your money, well, but you get to keep it, but you open an account and you don't get to see your money right away, but it is here, okay? And you start planning for your future with that. We have some one-on-one mentorships that we have. Officer Cortez, my partner, is doing a program right now that is kind of a precursor to some summer youth employment where kids are coming in learning about how to get a job, how to interview, what it would take to get a job later on down the road. So we have kids that are willing to take time every Sunday right now, 3 and 4 hours a Sunday, to learn what it takes to get a job and in hopes that in the summer they will be able to get one of these jobs. So this is just some of the things that we do in this program that is kind of an offshoot of the summer youth thing. We're doing things year-round to develop these kids so that they are ready to work when they do come into this program.
It also, if I may add that, the state funding that we received is great, and that allows us to, have the 745 jobs for the summer, but, through our other sources, we have 125 kids working out there right now, working year-round, too, so it certainly helps us with the year-round aspect of this job, also, of this program.
And then just to clarify something, one of the things that you had asked about is the long-term effects and things like that and how it affects. This is I've been working with Matt for 3 years now, and this is the second year in a row where we have had kids who have had younger brothers and sisters who were not old enough to participate the first year, who have come to us and asked, hey, you know, my brother had a job here last year, can I get a job too? So so we eventually get them in, and we have siblings wanting to come because the older brothers and sisters have participated with us in the past. And so the effect is much greater than just that one individual. I mean, it kind of affects the whole family, kids that want to participate. Parents are happy too, that the kids are wanting to go out and seek these skills so that they can work.
Thank you. You know, and I'm going to take the prerogative of the chair to say that, you know, you started the program in 2004. It's not unlikely that you've done a lot of tracking, because I don't think that's something the state has ever asked, or communities and haven't kind of gone down that road. So if you've got some kids that from 2004, that'd be 5 years ago or 4 years ago, you know, that'd be for the next committee, because I'm sure you'll have another committee. It'd be nice for them to come on in and say that, you know, boy, I'm now going to be a environmentalist or a biologist, or I'm going to be a
librarian,
police officer, or whatever. Just so you know, I'm like a one horse, you know, guy. I mean, it's like we got to figure out if we're, you know, if in the end is doing what we want it to do. And we can't do that if we don't have any idea of, I don't want to say accountability, because I think I can tell that it's not, you know, your heart's in this. It's not just a job. And so the accountability is hard to use as a word. It's kind of a harsher word. Just so that we understand and you can explain to us how this is actually bearing fruit. It'd be great for that. Any questions? Representative Poppy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up a little bit on what you just talked about, do you have any long-term, do you have any data that shows year after year what kinds of things you've done with these youth?
No, unfortunately, I don't have the resources to kind of track that. I do, at the end of the year, like mentioned, have the survey, survey out there with the kids on what they did for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've learned in the summer, and what they thought of the program, what skills they learned, and you know, did this job help you? Do you learn how to react with the peers now better, and things like that? But long term, I don't have anything in place.
And have you ever thought about doing that? And well, are you? And
I'm trying to figure out how. And I'm a master of Google, believe me. And
okay.
I believe you were saying earlier about other jobs, mm-hmm. other job programs throughout the country. I'm a master of Google, and I'm looking up that stuff all the time to see how other places are doing that. And I'm stealing ideas all the time.
Okay.
Borrowing ideas.
And Mr. Chair,
yes, we have quickly, because we have three other presenters here. So
thank you. I just. Can you tell me about the coordination that you have with the school district, with community-based organizations, with businesses, how you work together? You said now you have more of a year-round kind of program, so I'm just even Sergeant here talking about meeting with the youth on Sunday afternoons, doing some training about how to interview for jobs. I'm just wondering if there's a JC's group or other groups that are out there, community-based kinds of organizations or professional organizations that may be assisting you.
All my partners do, and I forgot to mention Marie from the Boys and Girls Club. She's fantastic. Those kids are there year-round and coming in, Marie, you know, when's that job going to start? When's the job program going to start? And, okay, you want to be interested in the job, this is what you got to do to get to that point, to get to being that job. Tamara, I believe you do the same thing. So all my partners, you know, I focus on the summer, getting the kids in there in the summer, getting them working, getting them trained, getting them skills. But all year round, my partners are the ones that are helping them get prepared for this spot. Did I answer that?
I guess I'm wondering if there are non-paid groups, people that aren't getting resources from the state, for instance, a JC's group or a Kiwanis club, or people that are professionals who are just adults who would say, you know, we have an expertise in this, we have some interest in this, that you'd participate with?
I could speak to that as a partner. I mean, we have a group, the La Dame de Scoffier, women who love to cook, that come and meet with us on some of our Wednesdays, and they come as volunteers and help pay for field trips to a Cedar Summit farm or to, you know, we're going to go and they're going to work, but that's something that we know the Youth Job Corps is going to pay for them to work. But I think there's a lot of partners out there that are able to be leveraged through this experience that we're having with the pay to be able to bring them in. But if we didn't have the other piece in place, it would be harder. So
the city of St. Paul also has something called Second Shift. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but that's a year-round thing to do after school. Taking the second shift refers to, okay, you got your school day, and now what do you do after school? City of St. Paul and Mayor Coleman have a program called Second Shift that the kids are involved with.
Members, I'm going to cut the question off because we've got a really, it'd be insulting to not get the other three down here. I appreciate you coming in. If you look through this, there are some other partners, and hopefully we can get those mentioned.
Thank you.
Opportunities, industrialization centers, Bill Means. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Means, and if you could identify yourself for the tape and please.
Good morning. My name is Bill Means. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota OIC State Council. Special greetings to Chairman Mahoney and, of course, Representative Slocum, who carries our bill, and esteemed colleagues. I'll make it kind of brief. I enclosed in your packet a fact sheet for the past fiscal year. We've been around a long time, so we don't have to go verbatim. We first got money from this legislature in 1984. We have what's called a performance-based contract with Deed, so the money goes to Deed. The proposed cut is $250,000. And, well, first of all, before we get to that, I'd like to say that this performance contract is renewed every 2 years with Deed, and I've enclosed a lot of quick statistics that you can look at, maybe have some questions. But we do have five programs throughout the state. We have three here in the urban area, one North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, St. Paul, one on the Mille Lacs Reservation, and one in Bemidji. So we're statewide, five programs. We received, as you can see in the last biennium, about $2.9 million. One of those years, we got a $200,000 grant from education that came through for our hard hats program, Building Trade. Again, I want to thank Deed as well, Commissioner McElroy. They provide office space and a lot of office equipment, etc., in a partnership with us. Our state council office is in the Deed headquarters. And so that allows us to stretch the dollar, as you'll see on the back page, where we have a return on investment of $21 for every state dollar. So now the impact of these cuts. As you look over all state budgets, you see that human services is taking a big cut. That affects us tremendously because that means we got a lot more clients because of the fact that more people are going on to welfare rolls. So, and people are being laid off that need new training. Presently, we have in the works, for example, as one idea of customized training just for these times, green jobs, energy auditors, which are less than 4-year degree. We're working with Minneapolis Technical, St. Paul College to provide that curriculum. The state needs over 300 to implement this package. We hope that some of this money will be dealt with there, but this is going to be a big impact, the $250,000. You can see how what our cost per training is. Of course, What we bring attention to is that $21.85 that we return for every dollar in the state. And I actually enclosed on the back our formula, how we come to that figure, so that you can submit it to your staff. We did work with United Way, kind of worked with them on their model. So we tested this model of return on investment. And that concludes my testimony, but you can measure our growth and success, as you mentioned earlier, by our placements, by our, for example, the cost per positive, our cost for training and placement at $3,100. Those of you in higher education or even in secondary education, when I was a principal, it used to cost us $3,500 to $4,500 per student in high school. So this is a pretty good cost effectiveness that we're giving the state on the dollar. We've been around a long time, so we can deliver. And we have partnerships with both, not only Deed, but also with Minsky throughout the state, with various hospitals. We do a lot of placement in areas of health programs. Our new initiative, of course, is building trade. Thank you very much. Have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Means. Are there any questions for the committee? I will take the chair's prerogative and say that in 10 years that I've been on this particular type of committee where your organization has come in front of us, you've always had a pretty good story to tell and some pretty good results. So it's good to see you again. Representative Winkler, did you have a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm confused, or maybe I don't understand the mission, but we have we're looking at the governor's budget recommendations, and I don't know what any of these recommendations mean to these programs. I don't know, you know, we've got a base budget left in the St. Paul Summer Youth Program of $1 million. I don't know what other sources of funding they have or what that means for what they're going to be able to do next time. We've got a cut of $125,000 per year, leaving a base budget of $2.5 million. I don't know what that means as far as programming or anything else. I guess if our mission is to evaluate what the budget recommendations look like, I don't feel like we're evaluating that. Feels more like an overview.
Well, I would say in terms of our cuts, you're talking about staff throughout the state, that's $50,000 per OIC program, five programs, cut of $250,000. That's a tremendous cut when we're already stretching the state dollar 21 times. So that means layoff of staff when we have more people coming to us from Department of Human Services. 93% of our clients are economically disadvantaged minorities. So we're dealing with the chronically, the hard to employ, the underemployed, all the various areas of employment that tend to be on the welfare roll. And we're trying to take them off the welfare, put them on the payroll.
Mr. Means, if I could frame it this way, if you're taking a $250,000 cut, I'm going to guess by the time all the benefits are rolled into it, that's approximately, and I could be off, but I'm going to say $50,000, so you're going to lose five staff persons. Kind of one of the questions I would ask is, if you lose five staff persons, how many clients does a typical staff person serve in a year? And this has not been a particularly great year for growth, so I'm going to guess that their average is even up this year. So if you have five people that you lose, how many less clients are you going to be able to serve?
Well, I would say it would be at least maybe 20-30% less clients, although we'll have more clients at the door, like the unemployment insurance line. Only thing people will be looking for a job or looking for training. So it's going to be a tremendous impact. Matter of fact, like areas like Bemidji, or a lot of, for example, overall 27% of our funding is state dollars. So we do have diversity in funding. However, places like Bemidji, where they don't have a lot of foundation monies and other access to resources, they're going to be even more heavily impacted. And a place like Mille Lacs, we can make some of that up through the band. Has been very generous in their office space, and they're granting us dollars that match the state dollars. So some areas, not so much. Bemidji would take the biggest hit out of our class.
Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair.
Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Means, but that would be by your design, that Bemidji would take the larger hit, because you're a statewide program, so you would determine where you want to do your resource allocation?
Each OIC program is its own independent nonprofit. We're bound together by a state council that's also a nonprofit. But the state council is made up of representatives from each OIC program. So they have their own board of directors. They'll have to make the final decision on where to cut. But keep in mind, Bemidji, the state income is a higher percentage to Bemidji than it is for the urban program. Mm-hmm. So they would take the biggest hit without even batting an eye, I can say that. They serve three reservations, by the way. Leech Lake, Red Lake, and White Earth. So you can see, and not only that, but the Bemidji urban area itself.
They have a big service area. Mr. Leech, thank you very much. I'm gonna call down Twin City Rise. Good morning.
Good morning.
Could you identify yourself for the tape and proceed?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Chairman Mahoney, members of the committee, and I'm Henry Van Dellen, here representing Twin Cities Rise. Twin Cities Rise is an organization operating in Minneapolis and St. Paul through its offices in Minneapolis and St. Paul to serve some of the hardest to serve people in our Twin Cities, people suffering in deep generational poverty, many barriers to success, some older than traditional clients of the program. And it's my pleasure to come back in front of you. I'm going to just speak for a minute or two, and then I want to give the bulk of the time to President and CEO of the organization, Art Berman, who's sitting next to me, to speak to the questions that you asked us to speak to. Kathy Lawrence is the Director of Development, who was listed on your agenda, could not be here today, but she's met with many of you individually, and you will see her at future committee meetings. You'll also have the benefit of seeing participants and graduates of the program, people actually affected by it. Some of you know, and it's good to be back in front of members and staff who I used to work with. I served in the House of Representatives from 1992 until 2000, a period of time when we enjoyed small deficits and large surpluses. So my heart does go out to you this year. I know what a difficult challenge you have before you. During that time, I was known as a bit of a fiscal hawk. So you might ask yourself why I would be here on behalf of a state funding for an organization like this. I don't live in Minneapolis. I don't live in St. Paul. I've come to know the program as rock solid, as designed by its founder and still chairman, Steve Rothschild, with a big idea, a big dream, that people in deep generational poverty could transform their lives. And it takes a while. It takes time. It's founded on the premise, as Representative Hawes articulated earlier, that hi and goodbye doesn't change behavior. This program really invests a lot of time and effort into its people. I think it at a difficult budgetary time like this, it warrants special consideration as a model of pay-for-performance. For the last 6 years, it has operated under a pay-for-performance contract with DEED, and the state funding is granted to it only when it delivers a tax-paying citizen in a job that meets the requirements of state statute in terms of increase in income, health benefits, and retention in that job. And so why am I here as a former budget hawk? Well, this program changes people's lives, and you're going to meet some of them later in the session, and changes their families' lives, too. But it also, as my good friend Representative Gunther, one of your colleagues, has noted, turns tax consumers into taxpayers. People no longer require assistance. They pay taxes. They grow with their families, and their lives are dramatically and permanently altered. So I want to turn it over to the President and CEO, Art Berman, and he can speak to the specifics that you've asked about.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. Mr. Berman, please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, my name is Arthur Berman, and I am the President and Chief Executive Officer of Twin Cities Rise. Thank you very much, Chairman Mahoney, and members of the committee. You have some material on Twin Cities Rise. Let me just kind of give you a quick tour of it. There's an annual report that's really just a reference document for you, but it's our 2007 annual report. We're in the production process for 2008, but it gives you a good sense for the program and on an overview basis and the people we serve, the people who support us, the employers who employ our graduates, and it gives you a sense of the financial dimensions of the program as well. There is also a PowerPoint presentation which I'm going to walk through in about 5 to 10 minutes, just to give you fill in some of the details on the program, give you a little background for those of you who are not as familiar with the program. And then there's a one-page synopsis, which is just a takeaway at a high level with some parameters on the program. Does everyone have the PowerPoint presentation handy? Okay. Great. So I will do an overview of the program and fill in some of the details, as Henry said. And Henry, thank you for that articulate introduction. I feel like you've covered about half of my presentation already. Then I'll give you an overview, describe some of our outcomes for the recent year completed, 2008. And then I will talk about the funding mechanism that we have with the state of Minnesota, the pay-for-performance model that Henry referred to, and the outcomes for taxpayers of Minnesota as a result of that pay-for-performance model. And then finally, I'll wrap up with a perspective on our outlook for 2009, given the current economic environment, and to the questions asked of prior individuals testifying, give you a sense for how the program is structured, where, if we were not funded, where what the impact would be, and how the funding for the state compares to other funding sources that we have, and what the overall picture would look like. So on the first page of the PowerPoint deck, which is a program overview, which is a schematic, the essence of our program is what we call our core program. This is the core work skills and personal empowerment training program that we provide. As Henry described, this is not a quick fix program. It is not a job placement program. It is a year-long, very intensive work skills and personal empowerment program. It's much like a school. We expect students to show up every day. There are 15 hours of class every day, every week, and about 15 hours of homework every week to go with it. It's highly structured. It's pretty intense. And we know from experience that given the population that we serve, which I'll speak to in a moment, this is the nature of a program that will work for a long-term successful outcome. If we really want to change people's lives, people coming to us from deep generational poverty, change takes time. It doesn't happen in a month or two or even three. It takes 6 to 12 months at least. The individuals that we serve in our core program are really the hardest to serve in our society. These are individuals we actually recruit in many cases at welfare offices, Hennepin County and Ramsey County. We get a lot of men coming out of correctional facilities into our program. We recruit at drug courts, halfway houses, and in neighborhoods. The individuals that come into the program, the average age is 33 years old. So these are adults that have not been successful in their lives. They have not had successful long-term employment relationships. They come to us with a lot of barriers, and we do an inventory of barriers when they come in. And a barrier we define is some factor in their background that will present an obstacle to full-time to success in full-time employment. So a barrier would be criminal history, and well over half the men who come into our program have a criminal history, chemical dependency history, mental health problems, homelessness, chronic unemployment, and the list goes on. So on average, people coming in our program have 3.5 barriers. So this is a challenging population to serve.
Mr. Berman, yes. if I might, we've got 15 minutes left and one other group after you.
Oh, okay.
Could I ask you to maybe go to page 5 where you talk about your performance model?
I would be happy to, sure. Let me describe on the slide labeled Twin Cities Rise, Value Created and Return on Investment. This slide speaks directly to how we're funded through the state of Minnesota and the paper performance model, where we are only compensated if we succeed up to a very stringent criterion of success. So we bear all the risk and expense of bringing individuals into our program and of training them for a year. And if we are successful, and we are not always successful, then at the end of the year when we place them, we get paid under this mechanism. And if the individual is still in position a year later, we get paid. So the incentive for us is success, and it's a long-term success. The history of our funding with the state of Minnesota is over the last 12 years, we have, as you see in this table, received $3.5 million in funding, and the return to state taxpayers has been over $14 million, and that's approximately a 300% return on investment. Now, the way that return works is when individuals come into our program, they are being subsidized by the state up to, on average, $6,000 per person, and they are not taxpayers. When they leave the program, they are taxpayers. They pay approximately $1,200 a year in taxes, and that's in the form of state income and sales tax, and they are no longer being subsidized by the state. So this is an investment. We think of this as an investment from a state perspective with a return that pays back within 2 years. And for the life of the individual's employment, it is essentially annuity income to the state, which accounts for the high return. We did not factor in any impact of reduced recidivism, and we know it's substantial, but quite frankly, we didn't feel we could quantify it with a high degree of accuracy, so we didn't include it, nor did we include a multiplier effect of the activity, economic activity of the employed individual. Having said all that, we think that the outcomes speak for themselves, we're actually very very proud of this record, and we are hopeful to continue to have the opportunity to be funded by the state. Let me just briefly give a perspective on the coming year and the impact of potential cuts, and then I'll take questions. We are in a very challenging environment. Of course, this is tough for everybody in the for-profit and non-profit world. Amongst non-profits, we are being challenged in several ways. One, we are facing increased demand for our services. For obvious reasons, there is a great need out there for this type of training and for help in training and employment placement. Two, our private sources of funds, which are the predominant funding sources for us, are being stretched as well. As foundations and individuals see the value of their portfolios reduced, there is a temptation for them to scale back their funding of nonprofits that they support as well, and we're starting to see that impact too. And finally, in terms of placing our participants, it's a very tight job market right now, as you all know. It's very, very hard. So we're leaning really hard on our very strong network of employer relationships that we have, but the fact is there just aren't a lot of jobs out there. There's very little turnover, and employers are scaling back. So we face a challenging year. We feel like we're up to the challenge. We have the staff, the reputation, and the relationships to make this work, but it's going to be a tough year. There's no doubt about it. In terms of our funding, we have seen a drop in our privately sourced funding. We have scaled back on our staff. We have last year we had a full-time staff of 37 people. Right now we have around 33. And we are looking at contingency plans to continue to scale back on our staffing. At this point, we feel like we've frozen salaries, we've cut back on benefits, and when we start eliminating people, we're really cutting into the muscle of the program. And we're talking about cutting back on instruction, classroom instructors and coaches. And every individual who comes to the program has a coach. So that what that means is, you know, our original plan in 2009 was to bring in 550 new people into our program. We have already reduced that 550 to 450. But we hope we don't have to reduce it more. But when you start reducing the numbers coming in, then we're going to have reduced numbers of successes coming out and providing that return to the state of $3 for every dollar invested. So that in essence is the state of affairs at Twin Cities Rise, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Well, I would love to give you the opportunity for some questions, but I'm going to ask that the members after committee catch up with you, because LifeTrack is going to have to extend committee just a little bit and allow LifeTrack at least 10 minutes to tell their story. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And I most of the members have your address and your phone number and know how to get a hold of you.
I'd be happy to take questions anytime. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Christy Goldberg, President and CEO of LifeTrack Resources, an employment and child and family services provider based in St. Paul. And I grew up in a large family and know how to talk fast and to say what you need while you have the floor. So I will use our 10 minutes wisely. For over 60 years, LifeTrack Resources has provided programs which assist individuals and families facing long-term dependency on public assistance to secure greater economic independence through employment that provides family-sustaining income. And specifically to your work, it's LifeTrack's allocation for our immigrant and refugee program that you're looking at. We're also one of the state's largest extended employment providers as well, too. And we also have experience as a partner with the Minnesota Employment Center, as well as a job skills partnership vendor, so a variety of perspectives. But quite frankly, looking at the cuts that are currently proposed, what would that mean to our immigrant and refugee work? We would lose partner sites. And when we lose partner sites, we lose the ability to serve businesses and employers. And exactly how many businesses, employers, and clients we would lose, I couldn't give you those numbers today. So we would serve fewer employers, we would serve a smaller geographic area. We also, with both of the programs, both do the extended employment and immigrant and refugee, we significantly leverage federal funding, as well as we've been very effective in leveraging private philanthropy and grants for both of those programs. And we know that it's not possibly, maybe, could have, it's definitely that those clients that we currently serve would be back on public assistance. So it would definitely be just dollars delayed and spent elsewhere because of the focus of both of those programs, immigrants and refugees, and our individuals with disabilities and mental illness. They would definitely be back on other public assistance. So there's my punchline for you. The purpose of LifeTrack Resources, Employment and Economic Opportunity Strategies, to serve approximately 6,000 adults each year. LifeTrack focuses on three community segments: adults with children who are working to decrease dependency on public assistance, and individuals with disabilities or impacted by mental illness, and quite frankly, that's the largest and growing segment of our employment services clients, as well as legal immigrants and refugees with broad ranges of skills and professional experiences. And we're very inclusive in our immigrant and refugee work and include all ethnicities and parts of the world in our immigrant and refugee work. Our clients have also included veterans, ex-offenders, emancipated youth, and teen parents. LifeTrack Resources services include employment preparation, job search support, general skills and customized training, transitional jobs, job retention, extended employment, as well as employer-focused candidate recruitment and placement and support services. The primary purpose of our work is greater opportunity and income today that creates greater resiliency, with a particular emphasis on the improved outcome for the children of our clients. As their parents achieve success, we know, research shows us, that the child's starting point for their own educational attainment and career and job success is significantly improved, and that's supported by a number of research and research reports and long-term longitudinal studies. We believe that this is a common goal of all Minnesota's education and workforce development policies and a key goal in the work that you have undertaken. The LifeTrack measures our results in several primary areas: initial employment, wage and benefit levels, job retention and extended employment, advancement in self-support measures, and that's basically the savings to the public sector, business services hiring rate by our employers, as well as families connected to child and parenting resources for healthy development and better outcomes for themselves and their children, again, that save and reduce long-term costs. Some of our recent employment performance indicators: LifeTrack, because we work with individuals with significant and multiple barriers, our placement rate for first-time employment tends to range in our programs between 40 and 60%. And again, benchmarks against our national peers who work with a similar population, we again rank consistently among the top providers, and I can provide that, the most recent benchmarking report, to the committee as well. During 2008, beginning average wages across all of our programs range from $9.10 to over $10.50. Not surprising, we saw a significant decrease from the first 6 months of 08 to the second 6 months of 08 of the average starting cost. In Ramsey County, for another performance indicator for you, we saw the three-year self-support index, again, that's with measuring less dependency, reached 78%, greatly exceeding the 70% goal. So that gives you a reference for a long-term measurement. Similarly, in our work with clients who are immigrants and refugees, results compared to goals consistently exceeded both placement and income levels as well. Our placement rates working with employers exceeded our 30% goal, reaching 47% of successful matches of LifeTrack candidates with businesses. And we take our business measurements just as seriously and significantly as we do our client measurements as well. Within our transitional jobs program, in 2008, we achieved again an over 50% placement rate for participants who had gone through transitional jobs. And at LifeTrack, that includes our packaging first business, which is a contract packaging business that provides high quality, rapid turnaround services to small, large, and medium-sized businesses, such as 3M, Tran, collapsible coolers, and others. Beginning in fourth quarter 2008, we saw a sharp reduction in those clients and business customers at Packaging First, moving from fewer long-term, large-run projects to many more short-term projects, and again seeing for those long-term partners even more dependency on LifeTrack as Packaging First contractors, that we provide the flexibility, rapid response that they need to stay competitive in this environment. Similar providers was one of your questions for us, and there are a number of similar providers, but I also would say that they're also, most of these organizations are also LifeTrack partners. Other providers would be Employment Action Center, Hire, Goodwill, Easter Seals, Rise, Inc., Courage Center, Minnesota Resource Center. We partner with LifeTrack in a variety of programs: Employment Action Center, Minnesota Employment Council, Human Services, Inc. in Washington County, AmeriCorps, Opportunity Partners, Composa, Accessibility Space, the Vietnamese Social Services, Hmong American Partnership, Jewish Family Services, Ormo Community of Minnesota, Intercultural Mutual Assistance Association, and the American Indian Family Center. And the reason for each partnership is to avoid any kind of redundancy. There's just not time in the day or dollars in the bank for any of us to be redundant. And so we have a long-term history of being very good partners with community-based organizations, both here in the metro area as well as statewide. The impact of the economic downturn on a variety of programs includes increased caseloads, increased competition, as we've heard, for entry-level positions, decreased advancements in wages for our extended and employment clients, a decrease, as I said, at our Packaging First business, which then limits our transitional jobs opportunities, the level of Interesting, the level of employer job recruitment dates for us are actually, it has actually remained the same. We are still running regular job fairs at LifeTrack and very active placements. And we think because we've been in this business for about 50 years now, those partnerships with employers are very strong, and when they come to LifeTrack, knowing that they're going to walk out of there with at least 50% of the people they meet qualified applicants, we're a very efficient recruitment tool for them. And we are seeing turnover in our clients, at least at those entry-level positions. Specifically within extended employment, our clients do compete for jobs in the private market. So what we're seeing, that in the old model of thinking about vocational rehabilitation, there was somewhat a connotation of extended employment and employment that worked with individuals with disabilities, that it somehow was a lesser position within a business, that somehow it wasn't critical to bottom line operations. In fact, the opposite is true. Our clients who are employed are seeing increased expectations from their employers to be productive, to add value to their business's bottom line. So their need to have that job support, job counselor is increasing. And again, we're seeing the recognition from our employers of the value add of LifeTrack as being that long-term partner. I just would share, in closing, some observations from our work that I think may be helpful in your deliberations. Minnesota's workforce development system for individuals with multiple barriers to employment have suffered, quite frankly, from the lack of adequate support for skills and knowledge training with true rigor for participants and relevancy to our employers. It has lost the family investment objectives and returned too often to measuring short-term, immediate small income gains versus sustained independence and next generational thinking. Within transitional jobs, programs such as Packaging First and other employment-based programs must keep these experiences relevant to the changing labor and market changes. Customized training for individuals must continue to be retooled as well, too. And LifeTrack experiences demonstrate the effectiveness of demand-driven, employer-focused approaches. The effectiveness in our program in making this a seamless process for our employers is crucial to the success of the clients as well as to the success of our economic strategies. With this said, the broad context matters tremendously. The broad context of economic development matters tremendously. Minnesota must have core strategies and mechanisms for supporting the creation and success of value-added industries and businesses. So I really applaud your focus on biosciences. This is the foundation for workforce development. Whether that's private or publicly supported workforce development, and the foundation for creation of the service, retail, administrative, technology, and construction entry-level opportunities that bring true job advancement and income sustainability. If Minnesota continues to allow our welfare-to-work policies and systems to be disconnected from the broader workforce development and dislocated worker and educational attainment strategies, it diminishes the effectiveness and fails to support the business growth and industry competitiveness most essential to our economic vitality today, tomorrow, in the state, in the communities, and for our families. So thank you for taking your broad brush approach and allowing us an opportunity to talk about how our work fits within the broader scheme of workforce development. Thank you.
Members, we've gone about 5 minutes over. I suspect that you would love to have questions directed to you if members have some. I'm going to adjourn, but it's been an interesting and eye-opening day. Thank you very much, members.